It's Tuesday and time to read from your comments. After the bombings in Boston that left more than 200 injured, we spoke with survivors of sudden tragic events. Alexa Sand wrote us from Logan, Utah. I was in London on July 7, 2005. At the time of the first explosions, I was on the Underground, headed for King's Cross. They stopped my train at Bankside and asked everyone to leave the station. Nobody knew what was going on yet. So I decided to walk to my destination, which was the British Library. I was about a block from Tavistock Square when the final explosion at 9:47 a.m. occurred. I remember clouds of dust rolling past and almost instantly the sound of sirens and people shouting. I was stunned. I walked on to the British Library where I learned what had happened. I had just found out that I was pregnant that morning. As the media listed the rising death toll, I remember thinking that every one of the dead was someone's child. Even the bombers themselves. Later, when I miscarried that pregnancy, I wondered if it wasn't in some way related to the events of that day. I suppose I'll never know. But I do think that to have been present and unharmed in such a calamity changed me and made me view my life and the lives of all whom I love as far more fragile and contingent on the goodwill of others than I'd ever realized. We also did a segment focused on the record number of Americans signed up for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly known as food stamps. Mandy Slack wrote from Tulsa, SNAP was an amazing assistance after my late husband became ill and then after he passed away. After he died, I lived with my family, but I was another mouth to feed and they could not afford to feed me. It made a big difference in my life during that mourning phase. Amy Mallison Austin wrote from Shingle House, Pennsylvania, it's not always so easy to get food stamps. In 2007, when my husband was still working for the post office, his hours were reduced. His check was $945 every 2 weeks. It was difficult for a family of six to live on that. We could not get food stamps because we have a farm and we take depreciation for the equipment, which made us look like we had much more money than we really did. It was an incredibly difficult time for us. We talked with A.J. Jacobs about his experiment, taking a number of massive open online courses, and his New York Times piece, Two Cheers for WebU. Helen Gerhardt wrote from Beaverton, Oregon, I took Coursera's Modern and Contemporary Poetry. I was skeptical that poetry could be taught in this format. It worked because there was a combination of watching discussions among the teaching assistants and professor. Every 2 weeks, there was an online webcast discussion, which made everything lively. Betsy Hedberg in Denver had a different experience. The class I took was disappointing to me. I'm a mid-40s lifelong learner and signed up for a world music class. I was quite disheartened that it emphasized multiple choice quizzes and preparing for the exams over learning for the joy of it. I understand it's a real college class, but I wish there might be a track for those of us who just want to learn some cool new things. If you have a correction, comment, or question for us, the best way to reach us is by email. The address is talk@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and give us some help on how to pronounce your name. If you're on Twitter, you can follow us there, @TOTN. Talk of the Nation is produced by Libby Franklin, Jessica Reedy, Natalie Winston, Laura Lee, Tinbeat Ermias, and our former intern, A.D. Quigg. Priska Neely also is one of our producers and handles our web content. Our editor is Sarah Handel. Sue Goodwin is the executive producer. Talk of the Nation's theme music was composed by Greg Smith. Tomorrow, it is a look at the rural brain drain. John Donvan will be here. Join us for that. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.